Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, March 6, 2015. It's just after 3:30 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Mentor. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And Alex is here. You know, right before the show, Yvonne had his wife and his son on to try to talk to Alex, and Alex refused to even be in the room, and he ran away. And now, of course, we start recording. He'd been sitting here nicely playing a game on his computer a few feet away, and as soon as we start talking, he climbs on my lap.
Right. Makes sense.
Because this is how it works. Okay, so we've got three main topics today.
Yep.
We've got Hillary Clinton and her email issue. And we've got Benjamin Netanyahu and his speech to the Congress. And we've got Vladimir Putin and people getting killed in Russia and fun things like that. Alex just took my phone that I was using as a timer.
Yay! It's one now.
Uh-huh. And so those are our main topics. Yvonne just also mentioned right before the show that we've apparently known ourselves, known each other about 25 years now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a while.
That's a while.
And my daughter chimes in about how old we are. Thank you very much.
Yep. Makes it feel a lot better.
Yeah. So, anything else of note before we start the real show?
Well, I mean, we were going to talk in our lightning round about how, Samsung made some tech announcements, which apparently nobody gave a shit about. But can I fucking say how much I hate the stupid Samsung refrigerator that I bought? Okay, all right. Because it can't dispense ice. Okay?
Your ice maker broke?
Okay, no. It makes ice. It can't dispense it.
Okay.
Now, this happened first, and I called a guy, and they came and they replaced this motor. Now, here's the stupid thing about me replacing the motor that said that it works a dispenser. Well, you know, here's the thing. Now, refrigerator's 2 years old. They said, you do realize that Samsung really didn't redesign this motor. And this motor is a problem in all the refrigerators. So I'm going to put this motor back in, and it's going to break, and it's going to give you more trouble anyway.
So this
really doesn't give me a lot of fucking confidence in fucking Samsung engineering. Can I be honest?
So wait, this was a brand new one?
Yes, this is a fucking brand new motor.
We have a Samsung refrigerator, too, that we got like a year and a half ago, something, and it's fine. It's great. We love it.
Yeah, well, don't hold your breath about it working too long that way, okay? Can I be honest? Because the other thing that's making noise is the fucking compressor on the damn freezer started making a noise. And I called them up and they said, well, yeah, we may need to service that. Check this. Samsung doesn't have on-site service like GE or anybody else. So they keep sending bozos, okay, out to go and look at the refrigerator. The last time they changed the company twice that was going to come out, and they actually never came out. And now since the refrigerator is broken, I haven't actually called them back, but can I tell you that the service also sucks? All I'm going to say is this. If Apple made a fucking refrigerator, do you fucking think that if a part was broken 2 years later, it's still sell the same fucking thing with the same broken part? That sucks? I would say probably not.
Probably not. But you know, your refrigerator and large appliance folks have a much slower cycle than the electronic folks.
2 years? Yes. Shit. Anyway. Well, yeah, I'm just a little bit irritated. Here's what you do. You put your glass in the ice dispenser. The motor goes and goes and goes. You hear a whole bunch of grinding stuff happening, right? No ice actually comes out. And then you actually pull out the fucking ice thing, and just crushed ice just falls all over the place. Oh, by the way, you weren't asking for crushed ice anyway.
Yeah, apparently not. Look. The ice maker working properly is an absolute deal killer for me. For my personally, like my wife would disagree. My wife keeps the refrigerator fully stocked with all kinds of stuff, way fuller than I would ever like. But to me, the whole refrigerator is basically just an ice maker. That's the purpose of the refrigerator, is to make
ice. By the way, it does it is cool water. Ice, okay?
But it just doesn't dispense, right?
It just doesn't dispense it. You know, it's kind of difficult to get at the fucking ice. Okay,
you have to open up the bucket and do that? No,
pulling out the bucket from the door is a fucking pain in my ass. Sometimes putting it back in is also a pain in my ass. So anyway.
Anyway, our intro time is up. Enough bullshit. We're going to take a break. While you were talking about your refrigerator, I had my wife come in here and take Alex away. And I believe she's probably sitting on him right outside the door in order to keep him from coming back in. Because I can see him moving the door handle and banging on the door.
You're scuffling.
Exactly. So, you know, so he is being held against his will in order to keep him out of this room. And we will be right back after this, and we'll start talking about Hillary Clinton next. Back after this. And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
And during the break, of course, Alex was outside the door saying, he's taking a break. Can't I come in? Anyway, so for those who haven't been keeping up, which I'm sure everybody listening has been keeping up, but there's been a big sort of eruption of a potential issue about Hillary Clinton and email while she was Secretary of State. This was spurred initially by an article in the New York Times and then pushed forward even further by an article in the AP. Basically, the gist of this is that during her time in the State Department, she used her own personal email for State Department business the entire time, and she used it exclusively. She did not even have a State Department official email. There were the subsequent reports by the AP reported, or if you read it carefully, it only implies strongly. It doesn't actually say that she may have run the email server out of her house. Both of these, and the New York Times article stated that she may have broken the law in doing this, but if you read the article, did not actually explicitly ever say that. And so there are a couple things.
But I thought it said it was a Gmail account. Well, service like that account.
So look, there's been a lot of really bad reporting on this. And this is one of the things I want to say, because like when this first came out, I was all about the hype about, I went on a tweet storm retweeting all kinds of things about this as it happened. And then later on, as people looked into it, I felt kind of swindled, because both with the New York Times article and the AP article, they significantly went out on unsupported limbs and implied various things without explicitly saying them to make this seem a lot bigger than it really is. And one of the reasons that pisses me off is because there is actually a legitimate issue in the heart of this. Because both of the major news stories about this way overextended themselves and essentially exaggerated what was going on. And in a few cases, there are things that, you know, look like
they're... what are you saying they exaggerated, for example? Okay,
so here are a couple of things. The New York Times article initially implied that Clinton was breaking the law. It turns out that the law in question was not signed into law until after she left the State Department.
Oh, interesting.
But there were regulations in place.
Right. It may not have been a law, but I understood I read the article.
Right. The 2014 law was not in place when she was Secretary of State. However, there were 2009 regulations in place. But if you look into it, the 2009 regulations actually allow for this with certain protections. And then even more to the point, like in some of the State Department things that were in place, the person who gets to decide the rules is the Secretary of State.
By failing to use it, what I understood is that may have violated certain rules, not law.
Yeah.
Rules that I thought the National Archives, I thought read in one article, said.
There was nothing that the regulations, if read carefully, that were in place at the time she was Secretary of State, do not actually prohibit this. They discourage it.
Okay.
But they do not prohibit it. As it's come out over the last few days, the first Secretary of State actually to use a government email address is John Kerry. Nobody before Hillary had used one either.
Why the hell hadn't they used the fucking?
Because they're idiots. And okay, this
that's that, this, that because that's the part that really gets me upset so, about this so thing. The, it's just now, it just seems now, to be like complete idiocy.
So
that
now. And here's where my thing is that I think the articles overextended themselves by implying illegality. They overextended themselves. The second article implied that she was running her email server out of her own house. And it looks like that was somebody who did not have any tech savvy misunderstanding registration information.
I kind of figured that.
So it was the service was registered to her house. That doesn't mean that's where the damn servers are.
Yeah, well, they're idiots.
You know, my website is registered to my house, too. I'm not running the servers here.
Right.
You know, so I think these articles significantly overstated the case, which, of course, you know, you set off a right-wing feeding frenzy here. But at the same time, what that means is now you have everybody who's a Clinton supporter saying, oh, look, they're full of shit. They got all this wrong. It wasn't illegal. Everybody else did it. Blah, blah, blah. This is a complete non-issue. But it's not a complete non-issue.
It's not a complete non-issue because it's idiotic. Okay, right. All right. It's really fucking idiotic.
And look, there are serious questions about her motivations, too, in that, you know, what's been implied here, and again, we have no proof because Hillary's not going to come out and say what her intentions were, but if she does, she's not going to say the potential bad interpretations of her intention.
Look, there was...
Here are a couple of consequences of using private email for official business like this. One... is that it makes it much harder to get freedom of information requests. So there are all sorts of reporters, congressional committees, et cetera, asking State Department to produce documents related to produce emails that Hillary Clinton may have sent or received, specifically in the context of Benghazi. And they've always come back saying, we don't got anything. We don't have anything. We don't have anything.
Of course they don't have anything.
Right. They don't have anything because Hillary didn't store any email there whatsoever.
Right.
And so the fact that this was the case made it harder for those legitimate investigations. Now, you and I both agree and have talked many times. We think the whole Benghazi thing is like trumped up nothing. Right. However, there was a legitimate investigation, and this made... Bzzzt, bzzzt, bzzzt.
Microphone just became unplugged.
Okay. Alex just unplugged my microphone. We're going to get him back out of the room. Hold on. Bzzzt, bzzzt, bzzzt. Okay, sorry for the interruption. Anyway, what I was saying is it inhibits those kind of absolutely legitimate investigation, makes it harder to find out what's going on. Because, of course, Hillary wasn't volunteering and saying, oh, don't look there. Look over here instead. It inhibits sort of the historical archival that, you know, they keep these things in a vault for like 10, 15 years, and then they release all the stuff to historians so that they can learn more about the administration and all that kind of stuff. It prohibits that. There are also concerns about, you know,
well, sort of, it inhibits that, not prohibits, but.
Yeah, inhibits that. And then there are also concerns about various laws and regulations relating to, you know, mixing of, you know, professional, sort of non-State Department business. Because she used this account apparently for everything. She used it for State Department business. She used it for planning her daughter's wedding. She may have used it for things related to the Clinton Global Initiative, which... if she did, shouldn't have happened. Now, there's no evidence that she did do that, but that's kind of exactly the point, is that, you know, when she did finally hand over information about this, it was all up to her and her staff to decide what to turn over. Whereas if it was on an official... God. My computer's going crazy.
What is that?
A DVD just started playing.
Okay.
Because when I plugged the microphone back in, I plugged in a hub that also included a DVD player that started playing. Anyway.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, the point is, this provides all sorts of opportunities for, you know, behavior that it eliminates the potential audit trail.
Well, it doesn't completely, because the problem is, look, in terms of, here's what it does. It creates even more problems for herself.
Yes.
If there's a congressional investigation and they actually went subpoena and they discovered that that's where the information is, they could subpoena. She would have to turn over all her email.
But here's the problem, because there weren't, like, if you had an official State Department account, everything would be automatically archived, even if you deleted it locally, because the server was completely and totally under her control, potentially. Although that's a little bit unclear, like, she may have actually hired her ISP to handle her email for her, in which case they might have stuff, but she could have deleted stuff years ago. Not just like, oh, there's an investigation now, so I'm deleting stuff. She could have deleted stuff on the fly as things were happening, only kept emails the day they came in. You just don't know. And that's the problem with this kind of stuff. Now, again, it's common behavior. Like, one of the reasons why this issue isn't going to go all that far is because everybody fucking does it. You know, we already know Jeb Bush did it. He did most of his email while governor with jeb@jeb.com or something as his email address.
Well, we had the same problem with Rick Scott that was the governor here right now, where there was a law about using, you know, you have to use like state emails, but that apparently he instructed a number of his aides and other people they had separate private email accounts, and there was a big brouhaha between the Newspace and whatever doing, basically demanding that he turn over those records.
Right.
Okay. Actually he eventually had to wind up turning over.
Yeah. But specifically on the presidential front, Walker has had issues like this. Bush has had issues like this. Romney's not running, but he when he was governor, he took all the hard drives and wiped them. So there are all kinds of things like this, because there are all kinds of transparency laws. And there was a really good article. I think it might have been either the Fix or Vox or one of these guys. I forget which one. Basically saying, hey, look, there are all kinds of transparency laws that have been passed over the years to try to make it so that public officials do their business in a way that's inspectable by the public. Right. But guess what? Public officials don't like that. And they're always trying to do things to get around that. And, you know, Clinton is savvy enough that I have very little doubt that she worked really hard to make sure that she stayed within the letter of the law, even if it wasn't within the spirit of the law. And maybe she ignored some regulations, but those regulations were ones that didn't have sort of enforceable penalties and things like that. And some of them are State Department regulations, which she controlled. Because apparently there were a couple things in the news today about guidelines issued by the State Department to State Department employees advising against use of personal email accounts while she was Secretary of State, and including apparently one ambassador who was fired for doing it.
Mm.
You know, so there's it reeks of hypocrisy. It reeks of privilege. It reeks of I don't believe the rules apply to me. It reeks of trying to keep your stuff out of the public record.
But here's the thing. I don't know about that. Listen, like you said, every other damn Secretary of State up until she was used her own personal email account for whatever reason.
These are all the reasons why it won't stick as an issue. It won't stick as an issue because it has been common practice in D.C. and among politicians to do this kind of thing. It won't, and so everybody's done it. It won't stick because this is a somewhat esoteric issue that, like, the public's not going to really grab onto very much. It's not going to stick because it's a long way from the election and people's memories are short.
Look, it was a very tight race between a Democrat and a Republican. This issue came up 3 months before the election, despite the fact that there was a lot of press coverage of it. Still the incumbent won.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing where I tweeted right after it happened. Like, this is not going to be something that would be change any minds really in the general election. You know, the Hillary people are going to be on one side, and whoever the Republican are going to be on the other. They're not going to be many people who change their minds because
of
this.
However, does this negate the whole stupidity of the whole thing?
The one opportunity for it to really make a difference is if it hit hard enough, fast enough that other Democrats smelled blood in the water and decided to go against Hillary.
But that's not the issue. Look, my whole thing about this, forget about the political implication, because I think the problem is that they're going to go through everybody and everybody will have been found to have been doing something similar to this shit. My whole point about this is, why the fuck are you conducting private state business using a fucking email account and some Mickey Mouse fucking place, okay?
Right. There are all kinds of potential security issues here,
creating such fucking stupid potential security issues. It's fucking ridiculous. I mean, you fucking Hillary, you know about all the snooping that the NSA is doing to all other people in order to get their fucking communications. What the fuck in God's name makes you think that your stupid Mickey Mouse server that you're fucking using to conduct state business, that nobody would have found out what the fucking email address is and been scouring through your damn server? You idiot.
Yes, exactly. And you know, whether or not it, I think as a political issue, in the end, it's not going to make a big difference, but you can be damn sure we're going to keep hearing about this from now until the election or until something happens and Hillary's not the nominee. But assuming Hillary's the nominee, we are going to be hearing about this in one form or another from now till the election. People are going to keep hammering on it, but it won't fundamentally make a huge difference in the state of the race. With the usual caveat, unless something more comes out than has come out, you know, so far, like we find out that, you know, the whole server was infiltrated by the Russians the whole damn time or something, which, you know, maybe. But yeah, it's just incredibly stupid, not to mention even without the security issues. I mean, like, as sort of a fundamental principle, I mean, you keep your work and personal email separate.
I mean, I know I do.
For any number of reasons.
I remember when email first, you know, came out, right? And people started working at companies. And I was one of the first people who worked at a company with email, okay? I remember that there was a lot of people at the company that used to use their work email for personal business, primarily because a lot of them didn't have a personal email account in the first place. Okay. And I always had a personal email account. I kept telling people, this is idiotic. Stop doing. I mean, you're putting your personal business on corporate servers. It allows other people. You're completely giving away your privacy on your personal information. Stop doing that. And, you know, people evolved and a lot of people stopped doing that. I remember that, about 3 or 4 years ago, we were going through this interview process for like a senior executive position. And, you know, one of the things, a ding that a guy got was that the guy sent a thing for the interview from a corporate email account instead of having a personal email account. And we were all like, what the hell? This idiot doesn't have a personal email account. He's emailing from the fucking company he's working in. What the hell's wrong with him? So attitudes have changed towards that. And I think corporate America, I think it's a standard thing that almost everybody, do that anymore.
And one thing that definitely has to be granted is technologically, the federal government tends to be like a decade behind the rest of the world.
Basically,
you know,
yes.
Technologically wise, they're often running old operating systems, using old technology. So, you know.
Shit, I thought they were still using tape at the IRS. And I'm not, you know.
They probably are.
Yeah.
You know, so all of these things, you know, you remember when Obama came in, there was the big deal about, you know, he wanted to use his damn BlackBerry. And that was a big freaking deal.
BlackBerry, right. Right.
And, you know, previous presidents haven't really done a significant amount of business electronically for these reasons, you know, right. And one of the defenses of Hillary Clinton is, of course, that this is also true here. Like whenever classified materials were, you know, according to what they've said so far, were not transmitted through this network, that was all done essentially on paper, you know, or secure video conference or other things like that. This is sort of, you know, subsidiary that, you know, okay, there might have been some things here, but it's not really super, super critical. And there was also, she said, you know, when she was corresponding to other State Department people, they were CC'd, and so it was assumed it would be retained because those accounts were government accounts.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Of course,
that doesn't cover anything that she's sending, like, you know, when she's emailing BB or something.
Right.
So all of this is a big, huge mess. And, you know, I also described it on Twitter. Look, this is a self-inflicted wound by Clinton. You know, this is going to needle her for a while. There was no reason for it, except if, you know, the obvious thing that everybody is saying is, well, she had to know this might be trouble eventually. Bush administration folks had already gotten in trouble for email stuff. So, she must have had a trade-off. She must have been hiding something that was worth the potential trouble here.
I
don't know that
not.
She was that sophisticated.
I don't think so either. I did hear, by the way, that she apparently ordered a massive release of fucking just everything that was in there. Okay, that was
no, not quite. What she ordered last night is she instructed the State Department to release the stuff that she had already given the State Department in response to their earlier request.
Okay.
So she is not saying that she's going to release everything she had on her email servers by any means. She is ordering the State Department to go through the material that her staff already determined State Department should have. And so one of these things is fundamentally a trust issue. The people who trust Hillary are like, she turned over everything relevant already. Why are you questioning it? But even if you trust or not trust,
I mean, the problem is, it's just, you know, by doing it that way, obviously, I mean, it all depends on whether you trust her or not, which shouldn't be the way it is.
Which is why if it had gone through a government email in the first place and everything had been retained, you could potentially have an impartial third party be the one to go through the stuff and determine what's relevant. But the situation we have is the person who determines what's relevant is Hillary.
Exactly.
And yeah, so if you start out just, not trusting Hillary, this makes you more suspicious.
You'll never be convinced. I totally understand why, you know?
Okay. And Yvonne pointed out we went long on that one. My apologies. My timer got reset because of our interruption. But we're going to take another break, and we will be back talking about Bibi Netanyahu, Iran, Israel, Congress, all this lovely stuff. Back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Jesus Christ. So, they just proposed send a paper down here.
Yeah.
To build a mall that's even bigger than the Mall of America, to make the largest mall down here in Miami-Dade. It apparently will include a Legoland the mall. That's how big it is. Jesus.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Giant warps.
Okay, we're back. To make up for the last segment, I set the timer for 10 minutes instead of 15 this time. Netanyahu gave a speech. What did you think?
He's a jerk off. He's a fucking jerk off. I'm just, you know, this is naive. You guys negotiating. Okay, great, BB. Beautiful. All right. Okay, so what are we doing that is not cutting a deal with him? Stone silence. He's bitching about the plan. He doesn't propose anything on the table other than what? Let's, you know, as the Onion made fun of, what? Start World War III?
He wants to go back to the status quo. Sanctions and nothing else.
It's moronic. It's ridiculous. I mean, that doesn't, you know, the current status quo is sanctions. Okay, great. Will that stop him from making a, you know, will that, I mean, I don't see what we gain by that. We gain nothing. I just, this whole thing is just absolutely 100% pandering to his for his fucking election. Okay.
And by the way, there's mixed. I have read a couple articles on polling here. Apparently, it's a really close race between him and the biggest opposition party, which isn't Labor anymore. It's some other name. Beep, beep, beep. This is Sam from the future, just with a little clarification there. The number two party in the polls in Israel is kind of Labor, but not really. So the Labor Party and a party named Hatnua, if I'm pronouncing it right, are running with a combined list of candidates under the name Zionist Union. So I was right that the number two in the polls was something different than Labor. It's Zionist Union, but Zionist Union is actually in large part Labor. Likud and Zionist Union are roughly tied in the polls right now. There's a number of other parties, sort of next in line down in the polls. The tie is at like 23%. So, as we said, you know, lots of coalition opportunities here and things going on. But it's neck and neck at the moment, apparently. Do-do-do. This is Sam from the future of the future, real quick.
This is Sam from the future of the future.
Alex from the future is joining me. Just a quick correction to my correction. In the polls, it's not 23% that they're tied at. It's approximately 23 seats in the legislature and out of 120. So it's actually even smaller. There are just tons of parties with tons of... with possibility to be in here. So anyway, complicated election situation. We'll see what happens. Do do do.
Do do do.
But and some the polls are basically mixed. Some say this helps. Some say this hurt. Some say it stayed flat. So it basically looks like it had no effect on his polling back home.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think. They've heard this speech before. I mean, that's the reality. Just because he gave it in Congress.
That was the whole thing. The photo op in front of Congress and the clapping and blah, blah, blah.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, you know, it polarized a lot of people that were against him probably in the first place. I mean, or 50 representatives didn't go there. I mean, Obama basically blasted him for the whole fucking speech right afterwards. You know, I know that, and I'm sure that his opposition probably blasted him for it too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to say, you know, in probably terms of the election, it was just, as a lot of people's probably pandering to his base. Look at me. I got invited to Congress. Look at that.
Yeah. And look, I mean, it wasn't just inviting to Congress. It was basically being as up in your face as possible against Obama in terms of saying that we don't care what you want to do. What you're doing is stupid. It's going to hurt us, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, at the same time, like you said, the opposition in Israel is like, what the hell are you doing damaging our relationships with our biggest, most important ally?
Even further. Right.
And you know, that it was absolutely clear from the very beginning. Look, I mean, there's no subtlety about it whatsoever. His purpose in this speech was to try to do his absolute best to undermine a central Obama foreign policy initiative and make it not happen.
Yep, absolutely. That was his whole intent.
And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see something else in the next couple of days trying to do something, because there are also, you know, quotes from, you know, the negotiators in Iran that we're close to a deal. We're not quite there yet, but we're close.
Yep.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, something else comes up in the next few days to try to scuttle it. But I don't see what his alternative is. I don't see how that makes it safer. But of course, the fundamental division on this comes down, as it seems like it usually does here, on whether or not you believe there's any element whatsoever of trustworthiness or good intent on the part of the Iranians, or whether you believe they are completely and utterly incapable of doing anything honest and will not abide by any agreement anyway. Now, of course, even people who don't trust the Iranians have pointed out that with the agreement, you've got a lot more inspection regimes in place than you do now.
That's right. Right now, we've got nothing.
You've got them agreeing to cut back on various things. And yes, it does have a sunset provision 10 years down the line, because presumably we think 10 years down the line will be a different situation. We'll look at it afresh and we'll decide what to do then.
Right.
But you right now, yes, the sanctions are in place. But there's actually nothing keeping Iran from doing what they want to do, for the most part, and very little inspection, if any, other than what was just agreed on a few months ago as part of the interim deal. With an agreement, they agree to various restrictions, they agree to inspections, they agree to this, they agree to that. Now, it's absolutely true that when you look at that... there was somebody who pointed out, like, the U.S.'s opening negotiating position and how much we've given up since our opening position. That's what a negotiation is.
That's what a negotiation, you fucking assholes! What the fuck? You know, listen, if that wasn't the case, if we wanted to just impose our will, well, then we just would have done what BB wants. Attack! Go to war! Bomb them!
Now, of course, the counter-argument is that, well, okay, but Iran hasn't given up all that much. But I'm not sure... that's the case either. Even as it is, there is significant opposition in Iran to making this deal. Like, there are lots of people there that don't want this to happen too. You know, so yes, it's a negotiation. We give up some things that we want. They give up a few things they want.
Right.
You come to somewhere in the middle, because, you know, they're agreeing to all kinds of restrictions on their actions.
Right.
And so. I think the whole thing was stupid. I think it's counterproductive for Bibi. Apparently, the election there is really close, so it could go either way. And as we mentioned last week, nobody has a majority here, so it's going to be a coalition of some sort anyway.
Right.
So it's going to be a question.
Bibi's party has Bibi's party has only like 25% support. I looked up the last time I looked.
Right.
I looked at this. I mean, it's not like Bibi is like getting, you know, an overwhelming majority of people to fucking vote for him in the first place.
Right.
I mean, he's winds up in fucking alliances of convenience in order to fucking get himself stuck in there.
Right.
So,
but there are a number of other right-wing parties. If you add them all up, you know, it's close overall between those who generally speaking agree with Bibi and those who generally speaking don't. So we'll see what happens. It'll be some sort of coalition, but, you know, there's a good chance Bibi won't be around anymore in a couple weeks. Of course, there's a good chance he will be. So we'll see what happens there. But I hope his machinations don't. I don't think so far they've scuttled it. And I think both the administration and Iran have made a point of saying how well things are going after the speech as basically a thumb in Bibi's eyes. I've seen other people quote, like, they still think there's no better than a 50-50 chance a deal will be reached. I saw one person saying that they thought Bibi's speech maybe lowered the odds to 40%. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And of course, even if a deal is reached, there potentially is going to be a lot of opposition in the U.S. Congress to allowing it to actually happen. But I think Congress is going to be somewhat impotent there, because Obama's smart enough that he will have designed the deal in such a way that he can exercise the necessary authority without changes in the law. And any law that is intended to restrict the president's action further on this is not going to survive a veto, if it even can get through Congress.
Right.
So,
which, according to the last chart I saw, it's like nothing gets through Congress anyway. So what the fuck anyway? Right.
Yeah. So anything else? Anyway. Anything else on Iran, Israel, nukes?
No.
Okay. We actually end this segment slightly early. Okay, we'll be back after this, and we'll talk about what's the guy's name in Russia who got shot?
Oh, gosh, I can't.
Okay, look it up during the break. Guy got shot. We'll be back after this.
I'm supposed to remember his name already? Shit.
Information.
His last name, well, his first name is Boris. His last Nemstov. There you go.
Boris Nemstov. And we are back. So Boris Nemstov. Nemstov, that's how you say it?
That's how I think it'd say it, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, a prominent Russian opposition person was involved in organizing anti-Putin demonstrations in Russia on his way home after something or other, was shot within view of the Kremlin, within view of his apartment.
And nobody has been arrested!
Nobody has been arrested, but Putin said that he's putting his best people on it. He said he will personally supervise the investigation.
Okay.
A number of people have put out infographics and such of all the sort of oppositional type folks have met unpleasant ends during the Putin era.
I'm surprised they didn't already call it a suicide. maybe that's going to be the result of the investigation. Yeah, he killed himself. Yeah.
Four shots in the back while he was walking with his girlfriend.
it's suicide.
And people have put a couple spins on this. One, of course, is people think, well, of course, this was a hit. It was ordered by Putin. Clear story. End of day. Everything else is a cover-up. The other is that Putin didn't necessarily order this himself, but he's set up an environment where it's clear that he wouldn't mind.
I'm gonna think that it's probably that one, to be honest with you. Not because I wouldn't think that Putin wouldn't order somebody assassinated that he really disliked, but I just think that I don't think that with all the shit that he's got in his mind, I don't think that this was like near the top of his agenda to get rid of this guy at this moment. Okay. I think somebody just did it as, you know.
Well, and also there's the question of, you know, these things can backfire.
Yeah.
You know, we had the biggest demonstration in Moscow in some time. I forget how long. Probably since the Yeltsin.
I said protests.
I know you said protests. Probably since the Yeltsin years, I'm guessing, is the last time there was something this big. And, you know, it stirs up the opposition. It invigorates them. He becomes a martyr. And, of course, I mentioned the two theories about Putin or Putin giving an environment. Apparently, one theory that's being espoused by Russian media is it was actually the opposition leader shooting their own leader in order to create a martyr.
That's I heard that story, too. I mean,
I think that's unlikely.
I think that's unlikely, but, you know, I mean, but, you know, being Russia, the place of conspiracies, I mean, I never discount anything, but. But I mean, I really think that, you know, like you said, Putin has really created this environment where his power is supreme, and basically that all those that are opposed to him should be crushed, okay? And I think that he has, you know, you know, especially with the difficulties in Russia, there's been already some unrest and some anger and people like, you know, higher level of protest. I mean, much, you know, not the level that we saw recently after this murder, but, you know, but there's been grumbling. And I think that some people were like, well, I think we may need to get rid of some grumbling. And this is, you know, their method.
And there, you know. It may well be also, even if it wasn't Putin, that there was involvement by people government-related, because there are already questions about certain security camera footage not being available and things along these lines. And So I would be surprised if it wasn't someone with a strong relation to the government apparatus in Moscow. But I'm not... I think I'm also in the camp of it probably wasn't Putin saying, go kill this guy himself directly. Because also, Putin's too smart for that. You know, frankly, you know, but if he makes it clear that, you know, his, you know, he is not pleased, somebody is going to go and try to take care of it. And but the big question to me is that I've seen a few people raise. Does this presage... more chaos in Russia itself, either with Putin starting to lose control or Putin doing a major crackdown
Here's the thing about what's happening in Russia. You've got all this foreign controversy. You know, you've got the issues with the EU and like the US because of the invasion to Ukraine. You've got like serious economic pressure that is on people like right now. I had posted a chart on Twitter this last week how right now the average Russian right now, their budget for food, okay, what they have to spend out of their earnings went from around 20% of their income to over 50% of their income right now because of the drop in the ruble and soaring prices and inflation because of the sanctions and other things. I mean, that is placing significant strain on the Russians in general. And when some stuff like that happens, generally you've got unrest and protest. I mean, there's just no way around it. And honestly, it's all of this shit for the most part is, you know, yes, oil price went down, but the impact of the oil price drop wouldn't be as severe if Putin wasn't doing all this other shenanigans that he's been doing. So yeah, I mean, I think people are going to be upset and angry with him. And there's going to be more unrest, I think. So,
but in the end, is it going to amount to something? Are we basically going to have the status quo at the end of the year?
I don't know. I don't think that Putin's going anywhere this year. but it doesn't mean that it's going to be a pleasant pleasant year for him.
Could you get the opposite? Could you have a major crackdown or anything like that? Or is it just going to be more of the same?
I think that it may get to a point where a major crackdown is a significant possibility. Yes, because I don't think these protests are going to die down anytime soon this year. I really don't. I think they're going to get they're going to get worse. I really do.
Okay. I think I'm going to bet for more of the same. Like I don't think we're going to see Putin like out on his ass or you're killed. I don't think we're going to see, you know, major crackdown stuff, but we're going to see the same kind of stuff we've seen for the last couple of years, which is continued crackdown on dissent. But not like killing it outright. Well, I guess they did kill this guy, but you know what I mean? They're not going to snuff out all the dissent, but there's going to be continued ongoing efforts to intimidate those who dissent, to keep them from speaking. And it's going to stay at a low level like that. And Putin.
Yeah. Putin and Clinton are very different kinds of people.
Yeah. He's going to keep doing the stuff he does. I don't think we're going to see a major change in behavior in Ukraine either. We'll be talking about this same crap.
Yes, we will.
Okay. Anything else? Ready to take a break?
Ready to take a break.
We're going to take a break, and when we're going to come back, we're going to do a lightning round. Back after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break. A wonderful break, yes indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break, yes. This is a break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, it is a break, and now the break is over.
Okay, we are back. Before we start the lightning round in earnest, I'll say we did get another piece of feedback.
We did.
Matt Wall, who a few weeks back suggested that we do 3-minute rounds instead of 2-minute rounds,
said,
"Well, remember last week we actually did 3-minute rounds."
Yeah, and
he replied back. Basically, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of him. Yvonne was right. 2 minutes is better.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
So we're going to do 2 minutes, especially since, as he said, we sort of plan to. The 2-minute mark is not the completely shut up mark. It's the hurry up and wrap it up. Like wrap it up in right. 10 to 15 seconds, you know?
Right.
So we actually do a little bit more than 2 minutes to start with. But let us go. Hold on.
We got a lot of stuff this week.
We got a lot of stuff. So two minutes each. We're going to be doing this for a few minutes here. Okay, here we go. CPAC. Any thoughts about CPAC, Yvonne?
What the hell was CPAC?
Oh, come on. It's this big conservative convention. All the presidential candidates came and gave a little speeches.
Oh,
blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, that thing. Oh, geez. Who cares? The only people who fucking care about that are only the fucking base. I mean, I don't think it makes difference.
The interesting part about this is just to see how much each one of them does or does not pander to the base. And you saw a lot of them, you know, do the usual pandering for the base. Rand Paul won the straw poll. He's won it several years in a row now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also important to note that the last few presidential election cycles, the winner of the CPAC straw poll has never won the nomination.
Exactly.
It was interesting that Bush did not pander to the base very much. And in fact, there were sort of protests and walkouts and stuff during his speech and stuff like that. So interesting dynamics there. That's all I got to say.
Well, I think the Jeb knows that there ain't no fucking way they're going to win if they keep the stupid strategy of just being the party of angry white men.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, next. Leonard Nimoy died.
I know you were very sad. I actually was sad as well.
Yeah. I mentioned briefly on Twitter, but, you know, important part of my childhood. I mean, I wanted to be Spock, you know, just a very significant cultural icon. It's one of those things I said, you know, it's most celebrity deaths don't really have a big impact on me. Every once in a while, there's one that does. Leonard Nimoy was one of those because it's just sort of such a key part of growing up as Sam, I guess.
I mean, I will say that in the last, I don't know, since I can remember, honestly, celebrity deaths that I've cared about, okay, there's only been like, that I've really like impacted, really three. Minor celebrity, because it wasn't a big celebrity. Look, the main host of CNBC in the morning, Mark Haynes, passed away a few years back. And I watched that. I watched him for, close to 20 years. I was crying when I heard the news. And I wasn't the only person. I mean, you know, Erin Burnett, who's on CNN, for God's sake, she found out worked with them, for God's sake. I mean, they put everybody back together. It was like, it was horrible. I mean, everybody was like that. When Steve Jobs passed away.
Yep.
I mean, I'm a person that used, Sam knows, anything Apple since he's known me, for God's sakes. And the day that Steve Jobs, I had advocated for Steve Jobs to return to Apple when Apple was in trouble. I was somebody that banged on the table and said that's the only way to fix the company, and he did. And the time that he did, I actually invested a whole bunch of money in Apple stock, which actually made me a ton of money over the years. So I, you know, personally, you know, felt like, you know, I mean, this guy, Jesus Christ, he made me. I mean, I not just money, but you know, technology and everything. I mean, I don't know. That impacted me. And, you know, when I heard this about Nimoy, I will say that fell into the same category, too, because he was such a big person in our childhoods.
Yep.
And mine as well.
And we're out of time on this one. But the one thing I wanted to add to that is just from all reports that I've seen from anybody who knew him personally, he was also just a great guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody, I mean, there's just no, it's universal. I mean, there's just nothing about it. And anything that you could see and hear and how he speaks and there's just.
Yeah, there are lots of celebrities that, you know, that is not the rep they have.
That's not Leonard Nimoy.
To say the least, but, you know, Leonard Nimoy apparently was a great guy as well. You know, everybody who knew him loved him. So,
yeah.
There you go. Okay. Next. There's going to be an Apple event very, very, very soon, like before we record our next show, probably. I don't understand. Right?
What's this event all about anyway? What do you expect?
It's the watch.
But do you mean they already announced the watch. You mean it's the actual, like, what? Like, officially, it's available?
Well, yeah, it's probably the available for pre-order and will be in stores in 3 weeks announcement. And there's a lot of stuff that they didn't show directly. Like, they gave the overview of everything when they pre-announced the watch a number of months ago. But there are a lot of details that weren't shown off. They weren't showing off apps that were finished because nobody had been able to make them yet. All kinds of things like that. So, this is the watch. This is the official announcement of the watch.
All right. Be cool. You know, I was today at a lunch. I will tell you that, geez, there's so many people that have, I've been shocked by the level of interest.
And, of course, the big open question is just how much will the edition version cost?
Yes, that will be interesting.
Here's my prediction on that.
I still think 10 grand.
Well, here's my prediction. They will announce the official pricing of the other two editions. They will be available on the Apple website and in Apple stores. The edition they will not announce pricing of. It will be available in select luxury stores. You won't be able to walk into your Apple store and buy one. You won't be able to order one online on Apple Online. It will be available at select luxury stores. And find out the price, you'll have to go there.
I know that they were doing a makeover of retail, specifically of the stores, specifically in anticipation of the watch. I mean, everybody must remember that they hired Angela Ahrens, who was the head of Burberry's, which is a very high luxury brand, in order to bring her in. I don't think it's a coincidence that they picked somebody of like that, especially with this kind of a launch of this kind of product. So, we'll see what that means.
Okay, time's up. Yeah, we'll talk more about it after it actually happens.
Yes.
Okay, next up. I watched a movie. I watched The Wizard of Oz, the 1939 version.
Jesus, really?
I watched it with my son, and my wife was in a room, too.
Did he like it?
He paid some attention. It wasn't his favorite movie.
God.
You know,
yeah, well.
But
did you like it?
You know, it had been a long time since I watched it. And I actually did enjoy it. Because, like, you know, everybody knows all the songs. I was watching it on my big projector screen. So a nice, yeah, the Technicolor part was really nice, vivid colors and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a nice little movie. And there are parts of it that, like, you know, there's certain parts of the movie that I remembered well from watching it however many years ago. And other parts where, like, I don't even remember this part. You know,
but, I barely remember the damn movie, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do know. I remember parts. I mean,
it's worth watching once every 10 years.
I'm sure that I have not watched it in more than 20 years. I'm going to say probably over 25.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Take a watch. You know, watch it someday on a weekend with your kid or whatever. You know, it's a nice, fun little movie thing. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Next up. Oh, and I watched it on Apple TV, by the way. I bought it from Apple.
Okay.
Next up, NASDAQ reaching highs that it hasn't seen since the tech bubble in 2000.
15 years is a long time, man. I'll tell you what. And it's a very different market. I mean, somebody had posted a chart, showed that the valuations of some of the top companies that were on that chart were like 600-700 times earnings. Right now, if you take this was of the five biggest companies on the NASDAQ back then, all of them had valuations that were, I mean, the cheapest was like 40 times earnings, and some were 600-700. Right now, the boast was like 20-30 of the biggest companies. 20. I mean, there were 17, 16, 17.
So now there are a few people saying that we're in a bigger bubble than we were back then. I think Mark Cuban said it most recently.
Yeah, I just saw that Mark Cuban said that. I have no idea why the hell he's saying that. I have no clue. I really baffles me that he'd be saying
now,
that.
Now, Mark Cuban's a pretty smart guy. How high are we from the actual all-time high?
No, I mean, this is like, we're very close.
Yeah, I know we're very close. We're very close.
Yeah. Yeah. It was 5,000 something. I mean, we're very close to it.
So quite possibly within the next few weeks, we'll break that.
Yes. Yes. But so, remember, it took 15 years.
Well, the other thing people have pointed out, of course, if you inflation adjust that chart, we're probably still a little ways away.
Yes. I mean, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think that saying that we're in a bigger bubble than back in 2000 is ludicrous. I mean, it's just nowhere near that. I mean, I remember that because I kept pounding on the table like back then, 2000, how the valuations were crazy. I mean, I don't know. Mark became a billionaire fucking like selling high at those valuations.
That's right. Okay. So, you know. Time's up. Okay, next up, Yvonne, what color was the dress?
I picked black and blue. Now, I thought, you know, I was like looking at the light because obviously you could tell that from the other pictures that that picture was a terrible picture of it.
So now the actual thing that I saw, like the first one I saw, I was sure white and gold. But, you know, I'm not actually sure I saw the official one because I saw multiple versions of that picture. And some of them looked clearly black and blue to me. And some looked white and gold to me. But like the whole thing, yeah, the bottom line I want to say on this is the amount of attention this thing got was absolutely insane.
Yes.
And the specific thing that got me, like, I didn't mind, like, okay, BuzzFeed had an article about it and all these sites and people were tweeting about it and sharing it on Facebook. Okay, that's fine. I got a fucking breaking news alert to tell me that people were talking on the internet about the color of the dress.
No, that's retarded.
Okay, I want a breaking news alert if there's been a major terrorist attack. You know, if somebody has tried to hurt the president, you know, if a major new law has passed, if the Supreme Court does something interesting, I don't want a fucking breaking news alert about today's internet meme. I'm sorry. And apparently, like, it was on, like, the nightly newscasts of all the major networks. It was on local newscasts.
It must have been a really slow news day, huh?
Look, I mean... Okay, again, I don't mind all my friends sharing about it on Facebook. I don't mind sites like BuzzFeed that specialize in this kind of crap. But
by the headline, and tonight in the news, is the dress black and blue, or is it whatever the fuck? I mean, come on, give me a break!
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, that a few hours earlier, the dresses knocked this out of the news, but there was a llama chase.
Llama chase? I didn't hear about the llama chase.
I think it was near L.A. I could be wrong. Somewhere down there, there were a couple of llamas that escaped and were running down the street. And it was like your helicopter's doing a car chase, except there were llamas running around and there were people.
So it wasn't the helicopters chasing O.J. It was in L.A. They were chasing llamas now.
There were llamas and people kept trying to catch the llamas and failing. Until someone finally lassoed llamas or something. But, like, apparently this was, like, live TV car chase, except they weren't cars, they were fucking llamas.
This is so ridiculous.
Okay, next.
Man. Next!
Excuse me while I cough a second. Okay, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
The next thing
is Ferguson.
Oh, I'm hitting the wrong timer. Not yet. I finished a book. Well, it was an audio book again.
Oh, jeez. You watched a movie and you watched a fucking book. Read a fucking book. Jeez.
I finished the book. It was Darkness Take My Hand. By Dennis Lehane. I don't know how you say his name. Lehane, something like that.
I have no idea. Anyway,
it's like one of these like detective novel murder kind of things. They're chasing a serial killer. It's the second in a series called Patrick Kenzie and Angela Gennaro series that are the two main characters. I liked it. It was the second book in the series. I think I actually liked it a little bit more than the first one. These two guys, you know, they were chasing a serial killer, and of course the serial killer comes after them too, and blah blah blah, and you know, you know how these things usually work. And I haven't been a big like mystery / detective reader in the past, but it was a fun story. So I listened to it on audio and I enjoyed it. So there you go. I will at some point in the future probably do the third one in the series. And if you like that kind of book at all, it's a good one. Try it out. Okay, next. The GOP caved on the DHS shutdown thing.
Shocker.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
It was idiotic.
Everybody knew they were going to cave. There was no question whatsoever that in the end, after they did whatever show they wanted to do about it, Bonnier would come up with a way that the Democrats plus some of the Republicans would pass what they needed to pass to keep anything bad from happening. And, you know, I saw one article that I tweeted that was interesting that, you know, look, you really have to start looking at Congress at this point as not the Republicans and Democrats, but there is a ruling coalition of mainstream Republicans plus sort of Tea Party-ish Republicans. And so you really have sort of three active parties in government. And they may not officially say that like that. You know, the Republicans wouldn't want to admit that they're not really one party anymore, but they're kind of starting to act like two parties that sometimes agree and sometimes don't. And so what you have is the mainstream Republicans in sometimes side with the right-wing Republicans in order to get things passed, and right. Sometimes they side with the Democrats to get things done, depending on the issue that goes through. And that's been the effective reality for a little while now, because there's been a group of the Republicans that have shown themselves very, very willing to go against their leadership whenever they feel that that's what they need to do for their own ideological purposes. And so there's not really... you know, the sort of notion of a strong party discipline where Bonnier can just say, okay, this is the Republican position, and everybody goes along with it. That just doesn't exist.
Right.
I mean, on some issues, but on others, there's this clear split, and we're going to continue to see that, I think. Okay, time's up. Next, Ferguson. They released a report about just how racist the cops in Ferguson really are. Thoughts?
Depressing.
And what's depressing is Ferguson has had this investigation because of what happened there last year. But the reality is, I bet you could go throughout the country and find this to be the case in many, 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 many places.
Look, I think it varies, obviously.
It obviously varies. I'm not saying this is universal. I'm not predicting that, like, you pick random town X, it's going to be like this. But there are lots of places in the country where this is the reality.
It's scary.
So,
you know?
So to those of you who haven't followed the issue, of course, they showed a number of places where there's documented evidence of the Ferguson Police Department acting in very biased ways, arresting and picking up and harassing black residents at a rate far higher than they do white residents for the same kind of infractions, racist emails being sent around the department without any penalty. And of course, if it was a really large department, you'd say, those things slip through. But like the whole department has like 70 cops. You know, right. So if somebody's sending around the racist emails, then, you know, people knew that it was happening. It's not like, but there were no consequences until this report was released. And of course, the mayor comes up, you know, and he's like, you were taking care of it. We're going to have some people do sensitivity training and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, whatever. That's not a real solution to these kinds of problems. You know, something much more substantial has to happen. There's been talk of, you know, disbanding the local police and having it run by, you know, at the state level or at the county level or something. And something like that might be necessary, but I'm not sure that, you know, in the general St. Louis area is much better, or the state is much better. So. Anything else to say on that? We're out of time.
No, not really. I think we...
Okay, Obamacare, Supreme Court. There was an Obamacare case against the Supreme Court.
Oh, but we don't know what... Well, they're debating, but no, we don't know.
The oral arguments were this week. They won't be a result for a while. The interesting part is this essentially all comes down to, for all intents and purposes, a typo in the law.
Yes.
And... The Republicans.
I think nothing's going to happen.
The Republicans who brought the case are saying this may have been a typo, but it's our responsibility to deal with the law as written. There's some very weak arguments that it was intended to be that way, but the record really contradicts that. The counter argument is that it may have been written that way, but it's clear from the legislative record and from the rest of the law that's not what they meant. So we should interpret it the other way. And it has interesting implications for potentially a lot of different things.
I really think that the court is not going to do anything that changes how it's working right now.
The historical, basically all, every single one of the members of the court, you can find quotes from them saying that, in general, you should look at the intent of the law over necessarily the exact wording of the law. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that seems to have been the bipartisan consensus over the years. The only question is whether, in this case, that will be overridden by sort of other partisan concerns where they come up with a reason why, well, in this reason, we have to follow the exact text. Of course, there are also some arguments that were made that, well, if that was the text, that might not actually be constitutional that way because of the way it treated the states. We'll see in a few months.
We'll see in a few months.
Okay, timer's up again. Next up, someone attacked the American ambassador to South Korea.
It was a freak attack by some lunatic. I mean, it wasn't like terror. It wasn't like, you know, something. I mean, guy went like, That's disgusting. I mean, you saw the pictures. You see how much blood. I mean,
the guy, he attacked the guy with a razor blade in the face and arms.
In the face. They had to do 80 stitches on the guy.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
I think you're right. This is a random event. But the one thing that made me think when, and I shouldn't say quote unquote random, but it wasn't some organized terror event like you said.
No, it wasn't.
But what actually amazes me about this is that this kind of thing doesn't happen more often. You know, when you think about it, okay, the president is under super, super security, but like Congress people aren't, ambassadors aren't.
If you think about it in history, it has happened a whole bunch of times. I mean, just look at how many times a president. I mean, now, look, not since Reagan got shot. I mean, we had another president shot at, but it's not like.
Well, I know, and we had that congresswoman shot a couple years ago, but I'm surprised like things like this don't happen every week.
Thankfully, maybe it's just because people aren't as violent as we sometimes think they are.
That's nice to think. But I mean, you got to wonder. Like we've got ambassadors in all kinds of countries where we're not necessarily the best liked in the world, and obviously many have stricter security than South Korea. Like one of the things I heard about this was the ambassador had specifically requested not all that much security because he wanted to get out in the people, and South Korea is not considered a super dangerous place.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, he goes around without a bodyguard and walks to and from places and things like that.
This was just a freak thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, so I you know, it's nice to think that you're right there, and what's going on is really that, you know, despite everything, things aren't really as violent as they could be. Because, you know, this could be happening every week if somebody really, really wanted it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Okay, next up, Boston bombing trial started this week. We have a lot of witnesses saying what happened. I can never pronounce the name. Sarev? Snarnev? Whatever.
Whatever.
His defense came right out in the first few seconds and said he did it.
He did it,
but they're pleading not guilty. Basically, they're using the his brother made him do it defense.
I am not going to discount the influence that an older 27-year-old brother has on a 19-year-old. Now 19.
You're remembering all the things your older brother made you do.
I mean, just in general, I mean, you know, the things that I see in relationships, I mean, I know the relationships I had with my brothers, and I'm going to say that, you know, you had an influential person in your family that steered you in that direction. I don't know if I would acquit him, but at the same time,
basically, it looks like
to discount that completely. It's just to me seems naive.
Basically, what the defense is going for here, it doesn't seem like the defense is going for an acquittal.
They're pleading for clemency.
What the defense is going for is don't give him the death penalty, give him life instead. Basically,
yeah, no. And I'm
against the death penalty anyway, so I think that would be a fine outcome.
Yeah. I still, you know, I'm a little bit like, for a kid that young, then we're going to send him to life in prison for something that in great. I mean, I don't know.
It's one of those things where you realize that, you know, like you said, he was 19. By the time he's 40, 50, 60, I bet you by the time he gets to that age, he will have fully recognized what a mistake he made.
What the fuck did he do?
And be really sorry for what he did. I don't think he's there right now.
But I don't know if keeping him locked up for life, I mean, is the right answer either.
Well, in general on these kinds of things, I mean, I know a lot of people are sort of out for revenge, and I understand how bad what he did was and how, and, you know, lots of people killed, exactly. People injured, etc. But I'm generally.
I know I didn't lose somebody there, but I've always been one of those people that revenge never fixes anything.
You know, and so my question is more about prevention of future crime, future issues. And
make sure that he receives a proper punishment. But, you know, I mean.
If it gets to the point where he's of no risk to anybody,
he should be released.
Yeah, I mean, although, yeah.
And I despise what they did, don't get me wrong. I mean, but I just, look, I think that I like where the defense is going with this. In terms of what they're presenting, they're not, you know, they're not discounting, but, you know, trying to explain the circumstances under which he was influenced that this kid was. We'll see what the outcome is.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I'm all for, you know, give him a really long sentence now, but reevaluate it every once in a while to see where he is. You know.
Yes, I agree.
So life in prison, but not the with no possibility of parole thing. I mean, you never want to completely discount what the future may bring. And, you know, like I said, 30, 40 years from now, he may be a very different man. So, yeah. Okay, we're almost done here. Harrison Ford crashes plane.
Well, Harrison Ford crashes plane. Apparently he walked away. He's in the hospital recovering.
But he'll be okay.
Apparently he'll be okay.
Yeah. So, and of course, you know, there are all kinds of tweets. While we were on the show, I tweeted somebody put first pictures of the plane crash and it had the Millennium Falcon in the golf course, you know, so.
Yes, I did see that.
Anyway, that's all there is to say about there. He didn't die. Good for him. It was a World War II plane. I didn't even know he was like a hobbyist doing vintage. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. No.
Okay, next up. You talked about your refrigerator, but did you want to talk about the Samsung phones? There was an announcement.
Well, Samsung I barely paid attention. Phones. Yeah. I think the point that I wanted to bring it up is the fact that I think everybody was kind of like underwhelmed by the whole thing. They just look. Oh, we rolled out Samsung Pay. I'm like, oh, gee, thanks. Like, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. That last year they rolled out a phone that was like waterproof. This year they killed it.
I'm
like,
okay,
yeah, no more waterproof phone. So I'm like, or at least well, because it wasn't that waterproof in the first place. The other one. So I don't know. It's like. There was just nothing. I mean, out of the announcement, you're like, okay, the new phones. And
were there any like compelling new features or anything? I mean,
the thing that they were promoting was the whole Samsung Pay, because the one big difference that they have between Apple Pay is that they support NFC payments, but apparently they support in some way being able to also use it with MagStripe readers. Now,
okay.
Which the reality is that the whole fucking point of doing it with NFC was to move away from the fucking MagStripes because of the inherent insecurity in them. So I don't understand what the fuck is the whole point of rolling something out that's using a technology that we're trying to get fucking rid of in the first place.
Yeah. Okay. Next up and last, the 1 year anniversary of the missing Malaysian plane.
Well,
I
don't think that they buried it underground in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I tweeted one article from one quote-unquote aviation expert who's been doing his own research who believes that the southern track was actually mistaken and it went north, and he posted satellite pictures of where they thought, you know, where he thought it might have ended up. You don't think that's the case?
No. No. I just, now, I will say this, I don't know where the hell it is either, and they keep looking for this damn thing. Look, the weird thing about it is just the fact, like I said before, I mean, there's no debris. I would have thought something would have been found by now.
It's a big ocean, and where they think it went down is very isolated, and
yeah.
And maybe the thing sunk intact. Maybe it ditched in the ocean and then sunk in one piece.
Possible, I guess.
And you know how long it took them to find the Titanic?
I guess.
On the order of 70 years or so?
Yeah, no, I get that. I know it's a big ocean. I get it. Okay, well, so we still look. Yeah.
Well, although they have said that they, of necessity, have to ramp down just how much resources they're putting towards that search.
Well, right. So, I don't know. Do you think we'll ever find it?
Ever is a long word, you know?
I said, do you think, okay, do you think we'll find it in the next 5 years?
5 years, I'll say no. I'll say no to 5 years. I'll give a maybe, I'll give a 50-50 shot in 15 years.
Hmm. Just weird. The whole thing is just weird.
Okay, and we're done, finally.
We're done. We're out.
I think we're going to, even on the lightning rounds, have to limit the number of topics. Because we just did a half-hour lightning round.
Well, we got interrupted a couple of times, can I be honest?
Yeah, well, it happens. Okay, we're done. Thank you, everybody, for listening once again. As usual, I'm at Abelsmay at Abelsmay.com, or we're both on Twitter. I'm at Abelsmay, and for those of you who don't know, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U. And we love to hear from you, and we love it when you tell your friends and all that kind of stuff. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you know, have a great week and enjoy it. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.